I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, December 30th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. As 2020 comes to a close, we're taking a look back at some of the biggest stories and themes of the year. And as busy a year as it was in this world, a lot of big stories took place out of it. We saw countries like China return to the moon, the UAE became the first Arab nation to send a rover to Mars, and the US turned to partnerships with private companies like SpaceX to bolster its programs. Here's a little of what that sounded like.
10, 9, 8,
5, 4,
3, 2, 1,
0.
Ignition.
Lift off. Falcon 9 and Crew Dragon. Go NASA. Go SpaceX. Godspeed, Bob and Doug.
And resilience rises. Not even gravity contains humanity when we explore as one for all.
On today's episode, our senior special writer, Andy Pastor, will join us to talk about what we saw this year and what we should expect as we move into 2021. That's after the break.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
We've seen an uptick in missions to the moon and Mars, as well as countries and companies putting more satellites into orbit. And the big question is, why all the renewed interest in outer space? Our senior special writer, Andy Pastor, has been covering this, and he joins me now to recap what we've seen and put it all into context. Hey, Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here. How are you?
So let's break down some of what's been happening this year, and we'll start with space travel. So who's been going where and doing what?
This has been a year of preparation and testing for space travel. No new entrants, either big or small, really in 2020. Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic hopes to launch people into suborbital flights in the coming year, hopefully from New Mexico, which is where they're going to establish their headquarters for such travel. Elon Musk, SpaceX, is talking in much longer terms about taking people to the space station. But for 2021, Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin actually hope to do some suborbital flights. It's been mostly a preparation year, as I said. There are some plans to take people to the space station in coming years by some smaller companies. And that's really unclear how that's exactly going to work out.
And as we mentioned, it seems like there's been a renewed interest in missions to the moon and Mars this year. China launched a mission to the moon. The UAE sent a probe to Mars. What's with the resurgence of these kinds of trips?
So there certainly have been many robotic missions, both by the U.S. and by the Chinese, and by the Europeans have also launched some robotic missions. Certainly, you have many more what are called spacefaring nations that either have developed rockets and spacecraft or want to piggyback on other countries that have rockets. It's a natural tendency, and countries like the UAE and the United Kingdom, which has also made significant strides, India is another country, they all want to plant a flag, if you will, and say, we are a spacefaring country. But of course, it takes decades to develop the technology and the wherewithal to do a lot of these things. So, and Russia is also one of the countries, of course, that's involved. But you're starting to see a slow development of countries that hadn't been very active space players that now want to get more interested. But it's mostly on the robotic side. Launching people into space is an extremely complicated, of course, endeavor. And you're not going to see any new entrants into that sphere for a long time.
Got it. So a lot of robots in space this year. And I want to ask, you mentioned Blue Origin, which is Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos' company, as well as Elon Musk's SpaceX. We've seen a big theme this year of these kinds of private companies working with government agencies like NASA. To recap, NASA and SpaceX have been working together on multiple launches this year, with SpaceX even taking 4 NASA astronauts to the ISS. NASA also just approved one of Blue Origin's rockets for potential use in the future. So this has been a big trend. What is the strategy behind these kinds of partnerships?
We'll see how well it works, but the strategy is to leverage U.S. government spending and use basically as little of it as they can and combine it with private companies that are doing their own orbital and suborbital work to try to get as much as the U.S. government can from the spending. The big test will be next year. There will be decisions made on what kind of lunar landers will be used by NASA. These would be developed once again by industry and with very little oversight or very little direction, I should say, from NASA. The idea is we have this pot of money. We'd like to get astronauts to the surface of the moon. President Trump has set a very aggressive goal of 2024, which is, in the opinion of many people who are working in this field, not going to survive. That's no longer going to be the timetable. But there will still be a pretty aggressive timetable, hopefully in this decade. But the idea is what kind of landers will be used. And that'll be a test of the technology and also the policy. Will this policy actually produce technology that'll take astronauts to the moon in a relatively short period of time without NASA's tight oversight? Once again, it used to be NASA would decide, here's what we want to do, here's what we want you to build, here's how it should operate, here's all of the specifications and standards, and by the way, we'll test the hell out of it and we'll decide if it's safe, and then we'll pay you for it. Extremely high costs, but also very slow. So the new approach, which is the one that NASA is using now, and I believe will continue to use, here's a pot of money. Tell us what you can do with it to achieve the goals that we want. We'll give you maximum latitude in the design and also to some extent in the schedule. All we want, all we're interested in is the final result. And of course, we'll make sure from our standpoint that it's safe, that we believe it's a reliable, safe operation. But we're not going to micromanage you. And this is a big change for U.S. space policy.
And just to really drive that home, what does private industry have that the government maybe doesn't?
Flexibility, initiative, and the willingness to fail. NASA, as many people have written and talked about for decades, after the huge accomplishments of Apollo, they reached a plateau and they fell back on a very comfortable pattern, which was, we want to succeed, but we're not willing to take any chances to fail. And of course, they had some horrible tragedies and lost people and vehicles. And partly as a result of that, I think the critics would say they became overly concerned and overly focused on fail-safe systems or systems that they believed you had no risk. And Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and many other companies, much smaller companies, they have an attitude of basically fly, test, fail, we'll go back to it. Now, of course, not with people, but they're willing to push the envelope, try new things. And the best example for your listeners, which happened just a few weeks ago, SpaceX launched a 16-story spaceship, basically a combination of capsule and rocket, blasted it to 40,000 feet, turned off the engines, turned the rocket around so that the nose was pointing down toward the ground, started plummeting toward the ground, then reversed it and tried to land vertically. Never been done before with anything of this size, and it failed. The landing was not successful. The engines didn't have enough fuel pressure to actually stop the vehicle from crashing into the ground, but the team managed to pull off the maneuver and a pinpoint precision approach to the landing spot. And it got a lot of attention, but probably not as much attention as it should have. It's a phenomenal accomplishment. It was a failed test, but it shows you that they're willing to do things that are necessary, even if they're going to fail in this one iteration, but they're determined to push ahead. And I think not only for 2020, but maybe for many years, that will be one of the huge accomplishments of the U.S. space industry, never before tried. And you'll see a lot more of that in 2021.
Yeah, it sounds like they're bringing that Silicon Valley fail and fail fast approach to space innovation. So I want to ask, when I wrote to you to set up this interview, you told me that the real story of 2020 has been commercial projects in space. Why is that?
So commercial projects in space are gaining prominence. Some of them are still in the planning stages. A few are actually in early, you know, development. The idea is to develop ways to manufacture things in space, 3D printing, pharmaceuticals, electronics, and more importantly, to figure out ways to refuel rockets and satellites in space, because without the ability to refuel vehicles so they can go deeper into space, we're stuck in low Earth orbit. It takes so much power to get anything up into orbit that when you're talking about significantly large vehicles and people, many people, hundreds of people perhaps, or even just equipment, it's extremely expensive and difficult to get it into orbit. So the idea is, and has been talked about for a long time, but now it's coming to fruition. We'll launch something into orbit, low Earth orbit, we'll refuel it there, and then of course, because of the way the aerodynamics and space works, you need much less power to get anywhere else. And so you're starting to see big companies, the major legacy contractors, and smaller companies working on in-orbit refueling and other ways to allow deeper space exploration. The other thing that's happened this year, which also involves commercial companies, is the government, the White House, NASA, the Pentagon, and the industry have talked much more about doing things on the surface of the moon. Things like producing fuel, mining for minerals, actually creating some kind of commercial operation that they can sell the products to others. Now, this is not going to happen next year, maybe not in this decade, but that is definitely the way going forward. And it's all driven by the idea that there has to be a commercial market. NASA will be a customer among many, but there are going to be other commercial customers looking for fuel, looking for minerals, looking for water, looking to manufacture things in space, and that's the long-term driving force behind U.S. efforts, and that's not going to change either.
So, of course, we should also mention that one of the major stories on Earth was the pandemic. Did that have an impact on space innovation?
And the big contractors and big companies, of course, slowed them down, created lots of difficulties. They had to, you know, adjust, but they've managed. But on the smaller end of the spectrum, small companies, especially startups that haven't completed their funding rounds and were still looking for substantial new investors and pots of money, that has definitely slowed down. I think my sense is that the pandemic has sort of blessed those who have, those companies that already had a pretty good plan, startups, if you will, and had strong backers, they're okay, and they haven't been impacted that much. But it's extremely difficult these days to get investors to put up money for really new innovative ventures, even if it's small amounts of money, because there's so much uncertainty, and the pandemic has really increased that uncertainty. And so I think that we'll have to see how that works out. For now, it's put quite a damper on smaller companies trying really new things, and we'll see if that continues.
Got it. So turning to the future now, President-elect Biden will be tapping a new head of NASA. What kind of impact could that have on our priorities in space?
As of now, I would say not marginal, but not overly significant. There is not likely to be, based on my reporting, a huge about-face or a huge shift in priorities. So what we're going to see is continued focus on the moon, developing lunar landers, launching this biggest rocket that's ever been designed, the Space Launch System, bigger than the Saturn V, which has taken many years, is way over budget, has had lots of technical challenges, but it will launch supposedly next year. And that'll be our deep space rocket for decades. And so Biden, I think, will put more emphasis, as I said, on science, on Earth science, on using NASA for climate change research. But I don't think fundamentally there will be a shift, because there aren't many other good options, first of all. And secondly, I think the U.S. overall, the government and the industry learned that we've had a history of constant fluctuations and shifts with every new administration. It's a new plan, it's a new slogan, and it's a new approach. And I think that people believe it's time that we've just got to stay on course, even if it's a new administration. There may be some adjustments, certainly will be. Timetables will be adjusted, spending will be adjusted. But the goal, I don't think, will change, and probably not the technology either to a large extent.
And of course, I have to ask about the Space Force. That's the new branch of the armed forces that President Trump established about a year ago, and it's still in the process of being set up. But could Space Force play into the Biden administration's strategy here?
Not so much at this point. I think in the future, there'll be more cooperation between military and civil space organizations, and they're already starting to talk about that. But the Space Force has enough on its plate just to try to get organized and figure out how it fits into the Pentagon. It really won't affect NASA's short-term and mid-term policies and goals. In the long term, it could have a big impact, because who knows how militarization in space will go, and weapons in space, and space is a battlefield and so on that everybody's heard about and talked about. But for the short term, it won't affect NASA very much. Some joint research, certainly, maybe more joint research than in the past, but nothing, I would say nothing significant.
Got it. All right, Andy, you're our expert. So what other major trends and missions are you going to be watching in 2021?
Well, I think, first of all, and maybe most prominently, SpaceX. If they continue to launch this big vehicle called Starship and do it properly and do it successfully, it opens up incredible opportunities for transcontinental and global travel, a much shorter period of time, taking huge numbers of people and cargo into low Earth orbit and then higher. It'll be, I believe it'll be just as significant a change if they manage to get Starship operating at a pretty good pace in terms of number of launches. It'll be as big a change as when they started launching rockets that were able to return and be reused again. It'll be a tremendous gain. The other thing I would look for is much more funding for science. The Biden team, I think, is committed to that. The people that he's close to in this realm are committed to that. And the history of NASA in the last few years has been trade-offs, trying to figure out how to reduce spending in one area to increase spending in another area, because its overall budget has grown, but not so substantially. And so the trade-offs have been, well, let's scrimp on some science and we'll try to do more on human space exploration. I don't think that's what's going to be taking place. There's going to be much more emphasis and more money on science, and the consequences will be a slower pace for human space exploration.
All right, that's our senior special writer, Andy Pastor. Andy, thanks so much for joining me.
Glad to do it.
That's it for today's Tech News Briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.